with Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.
Today's show is brought to you by Renault, official car partner of the GAA. With a proud tradition in Ireland, Renault are committed to supporting those who give their everything to the game, both on and off the field. And after another hard-fought road to Croker, they understand as well as yourselves how important it is to enjoy the journey. That passion for what drives you extends to the time you spend on the road. With that in mind, head to Renault.ie/GAA for access to special motoring offers exclusive to GAA members.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on,
Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Okay, folks, you're very welcome. Up to Cork again for the Irish Examiner GAA podcast, brought to you by Renault. We're joined in studio by former Kerry manager Eamon Fitzmaurice and current Cork manager Ronan McCarthy, with Tony Lean overseeing proceedings as always and Larry Ryan on sound. It's been a really busy weekend. Two big games, two big semi-finals. You were up, Eamon? Yeah,
I was, Michal. Yeah, I was there for the two games.
You enjoyed your weekend?
I did.
Yeah,
I was
different.
Happy,
different kind of a look after yesterday. I suppose we'll start with. Well, the bigger one to us for the most people in the room was Kerry and Tyrone, and I suppose people weren't overly confident. Kerry weren't favourites going into the game. It looked something kind of, you know, dangerous that they could get caught, I suppose, really.
Yeah, I think a lot of us we were unsure probably more so about Tyrone than ourselves what level Tyrone were going to bring, because you know, they've had a mixed bag of championship where they've been very good in some games and then they haven't been as good in other games. You know, against Cork and against Ronan, they were off it in the first half and the lads had a great first half, and then the second half they were a different animal completely. So we weren't too sure what Tyrone were going to bring, but from the Kerry perspective, you know, the second half in particular and the final 15 minutes, the way they closed it out was very satisfying.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, like the half that, or the game he had against them, Ronan, obviously, I think that probably put, I'm not sure if that put Tyrone back a level in terms of maybe they had been blown up a little bit through their procession through the qualifiers, and then Cork really, you know, could have got a result out of them and certainly played some serious football and punched holes in them regularly in the first half. And only for Matty Donnelly that they're running, you know, you could have come away with the result.
Yeah, I wouldn't have felt that Tyrone were favourites for the game yesterday. I think a lot of the games, you know, Donegal, Mayo as well, they're very hard to call, you know, in advance. And, you know, I don't think people should be that surprised that Kerry won yesterday. You know, look, I think they had every chance going into it. They have quality up front, and the question was, you know, would those forwards get the opportunity? And look, as the game wore on, they did. And you know, I suppose where Matty Donnelly's influence against us probably grew in the second half, it you know, it didn't in this game yesterday. Pete Hart never got into the game really. Again, he'd a better second half against us. So look, I think Kerry kind of took control and I suppose nullified, maybe not so much with McShane, but other than that, nullified the influence of I suppose Tyrone's key players, Niall Sutton taken off, which he didn't seem pleased about. And you know, so I don't think there's any great surprise, you know, and we could have been sitting here with Tyrone winning as well and saying, you know, I think they were two very tight games, but yeah. To call. Look, Kerry definitely deserved it yesterday.
And those key matchups were interesting, Fitzy, weren't they? I mean, like Tom Sullivan did a fantastic job on Peter Hart. I don't think Peter Hart's had a brilliant year by his own standards. He hasn't probably played the football that we've seen him, you know, in the past couple of years. But like Tom Sullivan is a guy who's after really growing in the last couple of games into a really key kind of defender for Kerry. And like in your, like, was he a guy with that kind of defensive capability in your day?
He was. I think, you know, Tommy Griffin's relationship with him through the school would be probably pivotal in the roles that he's been given. He would have been, you know, in schools football, we would have always had him when he was in the back. Sometimes we had to play him in the forwards out of necessity because he can play up there as well. But he was always given the danger man Himself and Brian Begley would have been marking the two danger men in the opposition. So he's good at that role, because particularly when you're marking the likes of a Peter Hart or a Jamie Brennan, as he did in the last game, where you can, he can go roving all over the field and he can hurt the opposition. He's very flexible. He can play in the full back line. He can do a man marking job in there. But then if, you know, as with Peter Hart yesterday, if he starts roving all over the field, he's comfortable going with him. He has the engine. He was a cross country runner as a young fella as well. So he's a big engine. He's quick, and he can hurt you on the scoreboard as well. So I think the only challenge with Tom for the last couple of seasons was getting used to the physicality of intercounty football more so than anything else, because all the other tools were there. And you know, he had a very good season for us as well last season, playing wing back more so than that kind of man marker going after fellas. And this year he's taken it on to another level, and you know, very satisfying to see it.
Yeah, but like you, Jamie Brennan against Donegal, Jamie Brennan came in with a massive, you know, he was having a huge season and one of Donegal's best scorers. And again, now the last with Peter Hart, like that's two serious notches he's after putting on the post for a guy. When Kerry, we were talking about defenders, we have loads of forwards, and you know, they're producing plenty of high quality guys up that side of the field. The likes of Tom Sullivan now is emerging as a guy that you're saying he can do a job on a key opposition back, a key opposition forward, which wasn't there. And even Marley on Matty Donnelly was another guy who had a good game. You know, Jason Foley probably. Like, I still think he actually did as well as a lot of people could have done in the situation that he was presented with, which was Cathal McShane, who has been the best forward in the country this year, and he's left in kind of 30 yards of space for a lot of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think the thing about it, you were talking about Tom there and the fellas he's done already. We were talking about matchups for the final already, and that'll kick into gear straight away, and you're trying to think of someone that'll be suited to Conn O'Callaghan, and maybe he might be the man. And you know, he's on top of his game at the moment, and it might be it might be the next step, and it's a huge step to mark Conn O'Callaghan where he's at the level he's playing at the moment. But it might be something the lads will look at. But I agree with you. I think that Tadhg has been very secure all year, and it's been a feature of Kerry so far that he is making that number three jersey his own, and he is given that bit of stability there. And he did very well in Matty Donnelly. Ronan mentioned it, that he wasn't really a factor in the game as he can be. He kicked two good points in the first half, but he never really dominated the way that he can. And when he went on to McShane then as well for the last 15-20 minutes, he did very well in him as well. And you know, with Jason, McShane is one of the foreign players in the country at the moment, and there was space, there was good ball going in the first half in particular. I thought he did very well. You know, it was a kind of a 50-50 battle. McShane won a few, kicked a few scores. Jason won a few, cleared them. He was under a bit of pressure in the second half, but you know, look, overall, once Kerry won, it's the most important thing.
Yeah, and I suppose like the big turning point came after halftime. I mean, Kerry were very lackluster in the first half run and couldn't really get anything going. I mean, I brought my kids to the game. It was their second game in Croke Park. Now, Fitzy, you won't want to. The first game was the first Super 8 game against Galway last year, and I actually was giving out to the lady who gave us tickets because we were down low in the Hogan and we got absolutely drowned. We were trying to buy ponchos and there was none available. So that wasn't a great first experience with no atmosphere in a half-empty Croke Park, Fitzy. And yesterday, we were up, we were dry, it was lovely. And the atmosphere and the way the game went in the second half, the way Kerry kind of stole momentum and just grabbed it and wrestled it away, the whole kind of crowd that were there, even though it was a very small crowd, what, 34,000, 33,000 people, but it felt like it was more because of the way that, you know, the game kind of went. But what was the big kind of turning point, I suppose, Ronan, like that changed the course of the game for you?
Look, I think McGeary was it went through, you know, that was huge. You know, that was probably a goal opportunity for Tyrone if he kept his head there and executed that properly, and the next thing they're picking the ball out at the other end out of the goal. That was huge. And that's why, you know, this thing about favourites and all that, they're turning points in these matches, you know, that come down to split second decisions. I would have felt in the first half, I actually felt Kerry should have been more patient in the first half than they were. You know, you talk about the atmosphere and, you know, the game being dull and all that. That's what you get when you play Tyrone, and you actually almost have to tell the players, look, forget about that. You know, that's the way it's going to be. You have to be patient, hold the ball, not take it into contact. But look, as the game opened up, obviously, you know, Kerry found the gaps. Obviously, Tommy Walsh made a big difference as a kind of focal point in the attack. And look, they kicked some great scores under pressure. You know, Gainey got a great score from under Hogan Stand, and Clifford kicked a great point under pressure, actually. But I felt, look, that was a key turning point, really, where, you're going through for goal, you lose it, and the next thing you're 4 points down at the other end.
Yeah.
And I think Kerry looked reasonably comfortable from there on and saw it out well.
Yeah, like the small margins, like, really, isn't it? It's just tiny, tiny little differences between winning and losing. And like you mentioned, you know, Tommy Welsh obviously made a massive impact. But like, I think all the Kerry bench had a significant, you know, played a really significant part in the whole thing, Tony.
They did. I mean, I think Jack Sherwood has asked a big question for the final. You know, and I know, you know, we're throwing it ahead already, and, you know, Fitzy's mentioning matchups and these kind of things. But, you know, if you were looking at the Kerry side, and, you know, in terms of the Kerry side that finished, in terms of what they'll do for an All-Ireland final, you have got to now put Jack Sherwood back in the mix. Adrian Spillane didn't have a great game yesterday. Now, Adrian Spillane, in fairness, has come in when he replaced Jack Barry and has done very well. And, you know, you don't make a decision on that. But I just thought Sherwood was really good. I suppose Gavin White hasn't got as much mention as Sherwood and Tommy Walsh, but I still thought he brought energy.
Yeah.
I thought Brian O'Begliach, who obviously was a late change, played very well. Somebody actually was saying to me last night, they thought that Brian O'Begliach was under a bit of pressure. I actually thought on ball, I thought he was really, really good, used it well. But in terms of what Sherwood brought, I mean, apart from the score which he got, which is kind of almost become his trademark outside of the left boot at this stage, but yeah. He executed all the right things really, really well. And I suppose the decision now is, and I know Eamon is a big fan of horses for courses, like Jack Barry came on near the end yesterday, has always done very well on Brian Fenton. Actually, for me, has almost kind of made too much of a name for himself for being the person to stop Brian Fenton. I'd rather he went out and was his own thing. But you know of a situation. Does management stick with Adrian Spillane? Do they look at Jack Sherwood? Or do they say Jack Barry has always done well on Fenton?
Yeah, look, I don't know what Eamon feels about this, but Kerry actually, and I'm not going to start lecturing Kerry people, no, pretty good, three people inside in the room, right? But I do think you actually forget the game yesterday, which I suppose brought, you know, a certain challenge that Dublin won't bring. And you look at it, you know, they'll obviously look at training for the next couple of weeks, but they may have to pick people out of the blue for specific jobs that maybe weren't involved yesterday or came on yesterday, or, you know, there will be this rush, obviously, to play Jack Sherwood. And, you know, obviously, I've no issue with it, but it may not be the right one, depending on what way they want to set up. And, yeah, you know, almost park yesterday, move on, and focus on the task ahead. I don't know how you feel about that, Eamon. But.
Yeah, no, I agree, Ronan. And I think the thing that Peter and the lads have done very well all year, and particularly during the summer, they've used the squad very well. Fellas have been in starting games. They've been on the subs bench the following week. They've been even in the squad the following week. So it has been a kind of a horses for courses approach, and they've certainly approached it that way. Form and training will be big over the next couple of weeks. You know, some fellas will have a natural dip. Probably fellas that have played a lot of football this year and have done very well so far will have a bit of a dip as you go into that 3 week block to get ready for an All-Ireland. But other fellas then will put up their hand. The only worry you would have for the likes of Jack Barry is his lack of football so far this summer, and he's a fella that needs football. So they'll get plenty of good quality football into the likes of him over the next couple of weeks. But I think what Peter and the management have done is they've given themselves loads and loads of options, which is what you want facing into an All-Ireland final. They'll have plenty of thinking, plenty of chatting to do, but it's a very powerful position to be in, to have those options, rather than now suddenly being in a position of being in an All-Ireland final and saying, OK, lads, what are we going to do? They have a lot of different things they can try and a lot of different things they can go, and that's a huge positive.
And you were mentioning, Stephen, the strength of the panel. I remember We played Legion in a county league game about whatever it was 4 weeks ago, and Jonathan Lyon was playing centre back, And the following week, he wasn't even in the panel for that Kerry game. And the following week, he came on and played 40 minutes at wing back against Ryan McHugh in the 26. And guys have kind of done that. Like you mentioned, they haven't been involved and they've been left play a couple of games with their club, and then they're back and they're involved in a mix. So, like, the beauty of it now is you're going to have 3 weeks, and fellas who weren't even involved in the 26 yesterday are going to say, Jesus, if we're going well here, we've got a realistic shot of actually being in the mix, you know?
Where are we on Tommy Walsh? Because obviously Mike, you're his club manager, and obviously Eamon had him inside with Kerry. Is it, like, yesterday was a big day for him, Mike? It was a big, big day, you know. I mean, in his own mind, I'm presuming, even coming down on the bus last night, he must have almost felt this was worth all the grief that I've put up with for the last 3-4 years in terms of rehab, in terms of getting back and doing all those things. But is he going to be one of those unlucky guys who you're saying, yeah, no, we need to keep him in reserve. We need to actually spring him, you know, rather than actually starting him. I mean, where are you, do you think, on that now?
See, I'm not like you with a rush to you know, saying Jack Sherwood needs to start or Tommy Welsh needs to start. No, but yeah, I mean,
put him in the mix,
but like even you're saying that he'd be unlucky. Like, I think I never I've never got the clamour to, you know, he's. I think that Tommy Welsh and Jack Sherwood and all the rest of them, like, can play a massive part, whether that's for 20 minutes or whether it's to play the first 40 minutes. I don't think he'll care, to be honest, because I think now Tommy, you know, and I only had a few text messages with him yesterday evening, but like he now feels like a player of significance again for Kerry, like. And while it was great that he played against Meath, that game was just a couple of levels up from a dead rubber, really. Like, they were always going to qualify out of the group as a top team, and he played, and that was great. But yesterday's game, like, against in a semi-final of a game that you were down a point or two when he came into the game, like, now he's, you know, that's meaningful. Like, that's big time action now for Tommy, and that kind of validates his decision to go and get back involved when Peter Keane rang him at the start of the year, when a lot of people probably advised him against it and said, maybe it's not going to work out, Tommy. Maybe the wheels aren't what they were before you left for Australia, and you might be better off. But, you know, he had a bit of belief and he had a bit of confidence in himself. And it's nice to see that kind of courage rewarded by, you know, by things working out the way they did. And like we were just mentioning it outside, Fitzy, about when he came back from, you know, when he came back initially from Australia and the panel. And I was saying to him, and like in hindsight, and I said this to Tommy at the time, like, that I would love to for him to have played a couple of games with his club, a good few games with his club, to try and get back into the mix. And like Fitzy is making the point, which is very valid, like, that there wasn't club games at that time, you know. So to go back in and training with Kerry before the County League even started was something that was going to naturally happen for him anyway. But like, That was where I think that whole period, like, where his ball skills and his physical ability, I think he's moving way better now than he was 3 or 4 years ago. Like, you see, like, this guy playing with his club now is back running the way he was running before he left for Australia. He's powerful and quick. Like, he won a kick out yesterday. Out of all the balls that was kicked him to full forward, he won a kick out in front of the Cusick stand. Mm-hmm. And as I saw Shane Ryan lining up to kick it, he kind of just, it was one of those with the inside of the boot, he floated it towards the Cusick. And he gave Tommy about a 60-yard sprint down the line in front of the Cusick stand. And I was like, oh man, please get to this ball and get your hands on the ball. And to be fair, he every yard, lads, he was gaining on or going past the guy who was there, hands out in front, won a ball, won a crucial free. He put the ball down, jogged up the pitch. And it just showed physically how much he's come on in those couple of years, Fitzy.
He has, absolutely. And I think that's a big part of it, that, you know, he had a bad injury in Australia and it took him a while to get over that. And then possibly took him going back to his club to get that kind of continuity going with his body again. And even the first summer he went back to Yee in 2016, he had a very injury interrupted year. Even that year, even in the County Championship, he was only patched together trying to play it, but he really rehabilitated his body and probably his mind and everything else in 2017, and in particular last year. Look, on a personal level, I'm absolutely delighted for him, because you know, when he was in with us and it didn't quite work out, he was so professional. He was so, you know, as is their breeding, as is the way they are, as is the way their dad is. He was so courteous. There was no sour grapes. There was no throwing his ties out of the cot. He gave it everything. He felt it wasn't working out. He wanted to go back. But I do remember, and I was thinking about him last night, he did say to me when he was finishing up with us that time and after the league final in 2016, he just felt that he needed to go back to his club. And he said to me, look, I don't feel that my Kerry story is over. And I said, I agree with you. I don't think it is either. And I suppose from the practical point of view with Tommy, with us, he was in with Kieran Donaghy as well. And he was in effect, when he came back from Australia, he was an understudy to Kieran. And if we started Kieran, if that wasn't working, well, the tendency was to mix it up and not go with another target man again. Yeah. If Kieran was in the bench and it wasn't working, well, Kieran was going to be the first man in then if we wanted to change it up. So there was that element as well, that he was almost competing with Kieran for game time, and Kieran was playing so well that, you know, it wasn't happening for him, and it was a practical thing. But as I said, I'm delighted for him. He did so well yesterday, and like you said, he's a real player of significance again for Kerry, and the Dubs fear him. They don't, you know, they won't like to see him coming. He gives something different, and he gives them something that can cause them problems.
I just make a general point there about, you know, players coming back from injury. You have a bit of a dilemma, you know, it sounds great, go back and play with the club and play matches, but very often, you know, this should be the case, and what they're getting inside in senior training is at a level higher than they're getting with the club, you know, so yeah. You have to be kind of careful with that. You know, if you have a panel there, and we'll say obviously preparing for a final or semi-final, you know, 30, 34 players, and like you throwing a ball there in training at A versus B, like that is at an elite level, you know, better than anything they're going to get in a club game or club training. So I suppose the ideal there is that you're able to pop them back to the club, like you explained there with Jonathan Lyon. Mm-hmm. You know, that's ideal.
Flood
them
with football. Like,
coming in and out, yeah. You know, as suitable. But I think the thing of sending them back, you know, 2-3 months with the club, you know, and expecting them to come out of that, to come back into an intercounty setup, I don't think happens.
Yeah,
you know?
No. I mean, but like the ideal scenario would be you tip away with the county on during the week, and if there's a club game, no matter what it is, leave him play that and go back in a couple. Like, it wasn't even an injury, really. Well, the injury was a part of it, but at the time, physically, he was saying he was grand. But his thing was he was after being kicking an oval ball for 5 years. He needed to reacclimatise to the round ball and just to get flooded with football. And
I think there's probably been a change over the last couple of years where, you know, intercounty managements are trying to get fellas back.
I think so, yeah.
You know, playing with if it's right, depending on the volume of work that's been done and all that. You know, certainly you'd see it in Kerry. We tried to do it this year as much as we could. And even the youth here with Dublin, you know, that fellas, you know, they need the football depending on how involved they are at the panel, you know. So I think it's a positive all round.
And just on that point, like, Fitzy, where, like, I could never see the downside of that. Now, outside of obviously, you know, you're talking about you have 2 or 3 weeks to prepare for a big championship game, and you're trying to, you know, get all your ducks in a row and make sure tactically you've everybody fit and healthy and do all that. But I mean, in the kind of, you know, in that period where maybe there's 3 weeks to a game and it's the first of the 3 weeks or whatever, and there's county league or there's club games on, I always had the impression that even outside of the physical kind of improvements that fellas can make and the confidence they'll get out of playing with their club and being the man playing with their club, mentally, it's something that's just very refreshing, I think, for I know you might have a different, obviously, perspective because you're on the other side of the fence, but I just think it can be really refreshing for a group to go out and go with your buddies and play a game and then come back in the next week, and it's a little bit of freshness back into the whole kind of thing as well. You know, where are you with that? Or
yeah, I remember Donal Cusack saying, I think for one of the All-Ireland, I think the 06 All-Ireland, that Cork had a 5 week run in to the game. And I think in hindsight, there's, you know, he said they should have gone back to their clubs, that they were actually together too long. You know, in that kind of training camp mentality. Look, I think it's a thing that you need cooperation from the clubs. So, you know, you release a player to play. You know, often there you're saying, look, let him play 40 minutes or 45. And to be fair, most of the clubs, you know, do that. Like, we'd had a scenario this year where a fella played a game where the club were winning by 20 points and they didn't take him off, you know. That's only one.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I suppose, look, you know, the clubs, we try to release them as much as possible and clubs do cooperate with us, and I think everyone gains.
No, just to add to that, I suppose, I agree 100% with what you're saying, Michal, but where you look at it from the practical side is that, let's say you're into that bubble in the summer, you're 3 weeks out from a game. The players actually don't want to play the county league game because you're training with Kerry at the weekend. You've had your Tuesday, Thursday session. They're coming from work. It's, you know, it's an intense session working towards football at the weekend. Mm. You're playing a match in effect at the weekend, every weekend. And that's a chance for the fella who would be playing the county league game to prove his point. Mm-hmm. And if he goes off and plays the county league game, absolutely, there is all the healing that you thought about and all the positive sides, but he's gone down the pecking order. At best, he's staying where he is. At worst, some other fella jumps above him. So they realise very fast that, hold on, I know which side the bread is buttered on here. If I want to be a Kerry player, I have to be here. I think the thing we always try to do is that, let's say we 33 or 4 bodies, if a fella played only 10 or 15 minutes, absolutely, he'd go off and play with his club and play a half or whatever. But you only know that on the day then, and it's not ideal for the clubs. This fella's ringing up his club manager who's given the team the night before. Yes. Suddenly he's available. And there was no ideal solution to it. But I 100% get what you're saying. Then if you, let's say, Kerry train on a Saturday, as we usually did, there's a game on a Sunday, a fella has played 45, 50 minutes on top of a load of that week, he's in danger of injury then if he plays on Sunday. So it's just a balancing act. I think definitely from my perspective, I'd love for the lads to have been able to play more club football because I think that's the way it should be. But just when you're inside in an elite environment and you're trying to look after them and get the best out of them, it's hard. Yeah. That, I suppose that's the point I'm making.
And just to make the point, you can agree with there, Raymond, that, you know, I said you were for it and we try it, but we don't get much opportunity, you know, because of the reasons he's outlined, you know. Like if you're doing a session on Saturday and it's, you know, and it's a heavy proper session, then, you know, you don't release the players to play. So look, there's a good intention there and you do it when you can and you try and, you know, help fellas who aren't getting much football, but the opportunities aren't there too often.
And if he goes out on, if Rory Dean plays goes out on Sunday afternoon playing a club game and he tears his hamstring, sure, it's all going to fall back on who's the manager to lift him play? That was a terrible decision. You know what I mean? You know, but just before we get off those substitutes, Eamon, because I know like Jack Sherwood was a guy as well yesterday, and I know we've mentioned him already, but that I was particularly pleased for because, you know, that time he came on kind of out of the blue, I suppose, against Kevin McMenamin, and it didn't work out, and he kind of just fell away a little bit, and I think that kind of rocked him a little bit maybe, and his football, like he never made the impact with Kerry after that his football and his movement or his ability to run probably that we expected. And I was really, really pleased for him yesterday to kind of have a very positive experience in Croke Park, because that was probably the you know, the last kind of real big one that he had there.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, same as that, I was delighted for him. And I think sometimes when a fella doesn't make it under your reign, it's almost like there's always some hidden agenda there. There isn't. It's a numbers game. And if a fella isn't where he needs to be at the time, you know, he goes by the wayside and he goes back to his club and that's it. I think I fierce time for Jack. I had him as an under-21 the year I was in charge of the under-21s, and he was with us then with the senior set up for 13, 14, 15. In 15 in particular, he had injuries and he'd big injury problems with his hamstring, and he just had a very frustrating year. And after that, similar to Tommy, he went back to his club, played a lot of good club football, particularly in the county championship for East Kerry, and his athleticism really used to come to the fore in those county championship games. But like you said, look, in 2013, that's what we thought of him. Kevin McMenamin, you know, had got the goal in 2011. He was at the top of his game at that time. We knew he was going to be brought on. We had to detail one of our subs, Tubby, the man, to come on, and Jack was the man. And he was playing that well in training that we felt he had the speed and the mobility and everything else to stay with Kevin McMenamin. It didn't work out in the day, but it wasn't like a case afterwards we said, well, that's Jack done. We knew that it was a big call to throw him in. And, you know, they're the calls. I was saying it to Tony yesterday. With calls like that, you make calls based on the information. If it works, you know, as the calls worked yesterday, you're brilliant. Yeah. If it turns out then that, you know, the information was flawed or it doesn't happen, whatever way, it's a bad call. But I think all you can do as a manager is make the, you know, with Tommy yesterday, the lad said, what can Tommy give us? He can give us shape inside. There's space in there. We're not kicking in ball. He'll win it. He'll set up a couple of scores. He'll distract them. And he did all that. So yeah. It's a great call, and it was a huge factor. And he ploughed Niall Morgan upside down. Did you see that? Were you coaching him that, were you? He ploughed Niall.
What age is Jack Sherwood?
Jack Sherwood was under 21 in 2012, so he'd be 28 now. So he's still a good age.
And he's an interesting example of, you know, Cork had this with Paddy Cassan. They had it with John Miskle, you know, guys who had been into the setup, you know, were left go off it and got an opportunity, we'll say, later, you know, in their careers. And they can really, you know, the second opportunity, they can really benefit from it, you know. Yeah. And the other thing I would say is, you know, that you have to be so patient. And like, Jamie, you were very good at this, you know, very patient with players. You know, people expect them to kind of come through almost, you know, in a year or two. You know, if you take a guy like Shane Enright, for example, mm-hmm. You know, I think he won an All-Star at 28, you know, but, you know, he came a long journey. You know, he was a player, you know, who would have struggled, we'll say, in the early part of his career. You know, teams would have felt they could have got at him. He was very, you know, but by the time he had got to 27, 28, like, he was very deserving of the All-Star that he got that year. You know, he was marking all the best forwards and doing well on them. And, you know, you have to wait for players to come through. Now, yeah. There's a balancing act there and holding on to them, you know, and that you have to make that judgment call. But, you know, I think we're very quick to discard players and say, you know, and you put 2 or 3 years into developing them, the strength and conditioning, the work, you know, tactics and everything. And next thing you let them go.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe if you were just kept, you know, persisted with them for another year or two, you know, you get the benefit.
And like, there's such an emphasis now on the whole, you know, development squads, minors, under 20s, and that it's almost like a factory. You know, you're producing players, so you got to get them senior action as quick as you can. But there is guys, there is people out there like your John Miskles or Jack Sherwoods, guys who are maybe fell away or gone out of the limelight for a little bit. But if you're looking, if you look hard enough, there's still a couple of guys there that come full circle when they're 27, 28 years of age that can play like Sherwood did yesterday, you know, a really meaningful part in a big, big game that determines whether you're going to get to an All-Ireland final or not.
And they're not as overawed by the opportunity the second time, you know, and kind of take it in their stride. And you'll find, look, most players, you know, come into their prime at that age, you know, that 27, 28, 29 bracket. So look, it's important, as I say, to persist with them, you know.
And speaking of persisting, lads, just on the Stephen O'Brien one yesterday, like, Stephen O'Brien is playing, you know, some serious football again, as he has done for a couple of years. But I think now he's, you know, he's nudging towards his prime, and his decision making, Fitzy, is something that's really, really after improving. Like, for a couple of years, he was a guy who would put his head down and carry ball into traffic, and, you know, he was always winning frees or he'd slip a guy in. But he's developing a bit of vision now and real kind of good, you know, good decision making, I think, in that final third. That's a new kind of addition to his game.
Yeah, and again, look, I think, similar to what Ronan said there, you know, Stephen is a great guy, and he's his attitude and personality is exactly where you need it to be. And because of that, then, you know, he's developed and developed and developed, and he keeps looking to improve the whole time. And he has improved year on year. I mean, when, you know, he was in 2013, he was involved as a kind of a panel player with us. And I knew him from the under 21s, and I knew that there was, you know, a serious player in there. But I told him in 2013, look, you're probably not going to make a panel this summer unless you absolutely shoot the lights out. But learn, soak everything up, develop yourself, because, you know, come next year's league, you are going to be in our plans and you'll get an opportunity. And he ended up starting an All-Ireland final then at the end of 2014 and winning an All-Ireland medal. And he has looked to improve incrementally every year, and he has, and he's really in a good place, strong place now. And, you know, it's essential for Kerry that black card, I presume the Meath one will be the one that they'll be looking to appeal, and once that's rescinded, you know, he's essential to Kerry.
Once that's rescinded?
Once it is. Is that said with certainty?
Yeah, is it? It seems to be.
No, absolutely not. I don't have the power to, but it was a very soft black card, wasn't it?
Yeah, I only saw it for the first time actually last night. I hadn't actually seen it the day in Navan. Yeah, I mean, I have no idea how it was even construed as a black card in the first instance. and I'm presuming the appeal process will take its own form. But Mike, yeah, exactly what you're saying. I thought one of the, I suppose it's one of the obvious things you look for from your experienced players is leadership. But when you look at what Stephen O'Brien, what Paul Murphy, and particularly what David Morn and Paul Gainey brought yesterday, I mean, I must admit, I thought Gainey yesterday was absolutely back to his best. I thought all the stuff he did, even like certainly like for setting O'Brien up for the goal, I thought that point at the end that put them back 4 points ahead was absolutely key. Because, you know, I had that fear, because you have so many kind of callow talents on the field, like that as long as it was 3 points, that they were vulnerable. Mm. You know, you could see Tyrone creating a goal chance and you felt that Kerry had to keep it 4 ahead. And I suppose in terms of leadership, Stephen O'Brien is probably one of those quartet now who's you look to as kind of being a guy who will make the decisions, the right decisions at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think those lads that you named there, they have a huge amount of experience built up over the years, good and bad experience, winning big games, losing big games. They know what it takes at this stage. And, you know, I think another thing with all of them as well is they're all pushing into their prime, or they're getting towards 30, and they know that this thing doesn't go on forever, and that when you're there and you have these opportunities and you're coming towards the end of the championship, that you have to make the opportunities count. We've been very close the last couple of years. I think that we haven't been that far away, but we haven't got back to final. We haven't won the All-Ireland. And those lads know that, and they know that when you get these opportunities, you have to grab them. And I think there was very much an element of that yesterday. And probably the older players stepping away, Kieran, Anthony Maher, Dunica, Darren, you know, in the previous year with the likes of Mark, Aidan O'Mahony, those fellas, that vacuum, Brian Sheehan, that vacuum that has been left by those fellas leaving, it can go two ways. Either fellas step up and fill the vacuum, or there is a leadership vacuum. And these fellas have really stepped up and have filled that vacuum, and that's great to see.
That's a serious 7 or 8 players that you mentioned there, you know, and it's going to take some bit of a transition, if you want to call it that, to for that leadership to emerge. And David Moran, without talking only about all the Cairns Rattlies fellas, like Moran, I think is starting to really, though. You wouldn't have called him a leader 3 years ago, Fitzy. I don't think in the way he is now. Like now he's your guy that's standing up and saying, kick me out the ball, I'll win it, and I'll make something happen going forward. I think he's just taking real kind of ownership over the whole thing, and like Gainey and all of them, obviously. But when you're in the middle of the field, it's easier to do it because you can affect the play a little bit more. And he just seems to me now that he's involved in all the key kind of moments of the games.
Yeah, I know. I disagree with you. I'd always have seen him as one of our leaders, and I think the key with him this year is he's playing very well. And when you're playing very well, and when you have that leadership in you, and you're looking for the ball and you can execute what you want to do, you can make real impacts in the games. I remember, you know, my first time saying, yeah, this fella's going to be an item. I remember in the 2008 semi-final, I can't remember, was it the draw or replay against Cork? And I'd say it might have been the replay that Kerry won. David came on as a sub in that game, and I'd say it might have been his first ever time playing for Kerry. And yeah, he demanded a kick out in front of the Hogan stand. He was this young fella
just
coming
after
in.
Cork had got a goal at Ronan, I think, wasn't it?
And he put his hand up and he called it, and Dermot kicked the ball out in his general direction. And sorry, Murph. And David won the ball, and Kerry went up the field and got a score. And I just remember that, thinking at the time, that takes big courage for a fella. And you were coming into a team there that was winning All-Irelands, and, you know, there was a lot of big names and what have you around you. And I think, you know, that's obviously just a snapshot of the time, but I would have seen him as one of the leaders in our dressing room. I think he's, when he speaks, he doesn't overdo it. He speaks well, he speaks to the point. He's a good habit of saying the right thing at the right time. So, you know, but again, I think that his form is in the place at the moment where that authority is being imposed on the game as well, which is positive.
And I think with all the guys that you mentioned there, like he would always, and listen, he'd be the key guy in our dressing room when he's playing, obviously. But even with Kerry now, I think that while all those guys, Donaghy, were so, you know, dominant, not domineering, but were were so huge in the dressing room, and they were the guys that people looked at immediately. Since all those guys have left now, I think he's, you know, he's elevated that side of his game as well, you know. And that's funny, 2008, that game you mentioned, I remember that very bit. I said to him after, I said, Jesus, Dave, that was ballsy, man. That was big time stuff there. He says, Jesus Christ, I never thought he was going to kick it to me. But he did, and he made some catch under the Hogan, yeah.
Can I just mention Maurice Deegan briefly and the referee yesterday? Watching in real time in Croke Park, in the first half, Fitzy, I thought like Sean O'Shea got a lot of treatment. Conor Myler was all over him. And you're looking at the umpires and you're looking at the linesmen, and you're saying to yourself, like, you know, what is going on here? Like, I mean, is there any communication? Are they going to do anything about this? Then, hey, presto, in the second half, Maurice Deegan is making calls left, right and centre about fouls that are going on up the field and that kind of stuff. And I'm reckoning someone had a word in his ear at half time. But I came home last night, and funny, you throw on the game and it's amazing then when you a different perspective. Kerry actually, I thought, got a lot of favourable, sorry, when I say a lot, that's an exaggeration. They got three or four, what I would say, very questionable frees. Mickey Hart, do you see, the reason I wanted to check it out is Mickey Hart was mentioning it quite a lot in his post-match interview, and he thought that Kerry were getting frees. And I kind of thought, Jesus, Mickey, what about Conor Myler? But when I went home last night and looked at it, there was three or four situations that Kerry got, I thought, very soft frees that all led to scores. I don't know what you think of that.
Will I let you handle that, Ronan? Will I?
Go first there, Eamon, I tell you.
Yeah, no, well, certainly where I was sitting anyway, Maurice Deegan had plenty of fans ranging from South Kerry vices to Northern vices, either praising him or abusing him in equal measure. So I think that's the referee's lot. I think in a semi-final, a referee refereeing a semi-final knows that's his final game of the season, and there is a tendency to let it flow a bit more. I did think Kerry got a couple of calls. I haven't seen the game back. I didn't get a chance to watch it last night. But we were probably due a few of them from the last couple of years. So but I understand how Mickey Hart can be frustrated afterwards when you lose an All-Ireland semi-final by a goal. And, you know, you feel a couple of calls have gone against you. It is a frustrating place to be. Been there, done that.
Yeah, I suppose, look, I'm not going to comment on a particular referee. What I would say in general is, you know, some of the... You look, okay, go to the Mayo Donegal match, right? Look at Dublin Mayo in the first half, you know, the last day, and the contact and the way the game was let flow. You know, some of the games, there's real inconsistency in what frees have been given for, I would say. And that's throughout the championship. And that, I suppose that would be a frustration from, you know, a management point of view, that you go out, you know, for certain games and certain referees and you don't actually know, you know, what qualifies as a free.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, you reach a hand in across, you know, it's given as a free automatically. You see the hand up. And on top of that also, I suppose there's an inconsistency in the application of the advantage rule and, you know, the amount of time that is allowed for it to go on. Look, I agree with him. Look, it's a very difficult job no matter what. You know, people are going to be dissatisfied. But I think it's fair to make a general point about the inconsistency of what frees are given for throughout the championship. I think, you know, they're just chalk and cheese, some of the matches.
I think, Ronan, sometimes the more physical a game and the more that's going on, the more it's left flow, because I think as a ref you nearly have to let it flow because there's so much going on. Yeah. You're just kind of saying, sure, if I'm pulling this, and I think that's why the Dublin Mayo games have often been classic games, because they've been left flow, because it's just been, there's just bedlam everywhere and you just kind of have to let it go. And I think the Donegal Mayo game that you mentioned as well was similar. There was so much stuff going on. It was a wet night. It was just left go. But talking about referees, I thought the minor referee yesterday, Mark McNally, I thought he had a very good game. I thought he was on top of things. He let the game flow. When he gave advantage, it was clear. And I was just impressed with him. I thought he was, you know, and obviously, unfortunately, from a Kerry perspective, we lost the game. But I definitely thought that he, I made a mental note. I said, this is a fella that we could see coming in the future. I just thought he was very good yesterday.
Brian Gavin in this morning's Examiner, his column, an injustice if Gough fails to get final appointment. which suggests, as you said, Eamon, if Conor Lane or Maurice Deegan isn't getting the final, is David Goff, an old friend of Kerry, the likely candidate to take the final?
Yeah, well, look, I disagree with Brian. I think it is an injustice if he does get the game, to be honest. You know, I think I'm not going to be dictating or trying to get my thing about who should get the game. But to me, an All-Ireland final referee has to be a neutral referee. And I think if you're living and working in Dublin, you're not neutral. There's a natural bias there. We're all humans. If you're living and working in a place, you're meeting people going down the street, you're meeting people in the shop, you're meeting people at work. You know, it can be something that can be in your subconscious. I've no doubt that when David Goff goes out to referee a game, of course he's trying to be neutral and impartial. I'm not questioning that for a second, but I just think that there's a natural bias there. And it can't be, to me, it can't be fair that if you're living and working in a place that you get to referee an All-Ireland final based on that. It's tough on David Goff from the point of view that he is a very good ref. And, you know, Dublin are in the All-Ireland finals every year. And because of that, maybe it's coming against him. But maybe he could move to Athlone or somewhere and he might get the game after that. But I think from his own perspective, there's huge pressure on him. Then the last time, the 2016 game when we had him, he had a bad day that day. He admitted it himself afterwards. He admitted the foul on Peter Crowley, but there were 7 or 8 other calls in that game that were just the wrong calls. And I think that he hasn't refereed a Kerry Dublin game since. And
you think with a reason. I mean, I'm just, you know, looking at it now, in fairness, from David Goff's point of view, is he going to miss out on a final because of something that happened 3 years ago? Because let's face it, that's the elephant in the room here. Kerry are going to be saying David Goff did us, inadvertently or whatever, in 2016.
Allegedly.
No, that's why I said inadvertently. You know, there was an incident. Well, in fairness, Mike, he admitted afterwards he missed it. He didn't see it. But like, should he then be punished 3 years later for that if he is the best referee and the most qualified referee to do this game?
I wouldn't look at it as punishing him. I think if you're living and working in a place, it rules you out. That, to me, that's the way I would look at it. I just think that if you're living and working in a place, it's very hard then. And, you know, if let's say, for argument's sake, Kerry got a couple of calls, then he's going to have a miserable winter listening to Dubs everywhere he goes, giving out that he stopped them winning the 5 in a row. So, you know, I wouldn't be far as I don't think it'd be the best call. But
look, obviously I'm a bit restricted here now on what I can say. But look, he did the Cork Dublin game, and look, I think he's an outstanding referee. I really do. And he, you know, you always have a whinge, you know. For example, the goal, you know, that Dublin got before half time. Look, there's no question it was 30 seconds over, mm-hmm. over the injury time. But, you know, that's not the way we looked at it. The way we looked at it is, you know, we didn't defend it properly and we should have seen it out to half time. Apart from that, you know, I have very little argument with, you know, look, I think he's a top ref. And, you know, and I suppose I'd make the general comment, look, you pick obviously your top refs for a game of this stature, and he's certainly one of those, and I would feel should be in the mix for it, you know.
It'll be interesting to see which way it goes, but I think Kerry people will certainly rather that he didn't get the mix. And again, I don't know, I wouldn't go down the lines of punish him. I think he's precluded because he's probably got a conflict with where he's living and working. If there was a Cork referee who was living and working in Kerry, he wouldn't be getting an All-Ireland final between Kerry and Dublin either. You know, I think that just probably knocks him out of the mix. But he'll probably get it now with all our talk. You probably wouldn't know it from listening to the last half an hour, but there is another team going to be in the All-Ireland final. And they did have a serious second half against a team that we thought were going to maybe put it up to him a little bit more. That was Dublin and Mayo on Saturday evening. And like I was at the game on my own, and I happened to meet Owen Liston, Bomber, just after, and we walked downtown for a cup of coffee, and it was very deflating. You were walking out of the stadium, and it was very, everybody outside of Dublin supporters who were obviously, you know, absolutely ecstatic about the fact that they were going into a fifth, you know, a chance to win 5 in a row. It was just deflating because you felt that this Mayo team were the closest to them for the last number of years. They had pushed them so well for the first 35 minutes. They were leading by 2 points. They were winning all the key matchups. There was none of the Dublin guys were doing anything. The Galacticos were all quiet. And then all of a sudden, Jim Gavin, quiet Jim, inside in the dressing room, flicked the switch. And these boys came out like the Avengers and blew Mayo out of the water in 10 minutes. Like, where are you going? Like, where is... And I walked out of the game, Fitzy, saying, why are Tyrone and Kerry even playing tomorrow? Like, that's what I... That was my feeling on Saturday evening. Now, it changed by Sunday when I was walking down, skipping down the road with my two kids. Yeah. But, where you were at the game on Saturday evening.
I was. First of all, tell the truth yourself. And Bomber didn't go for a cup of coffee. We're not going to buy that on a Saturday evening in Dublin. In fairness to Dublin, they were outstanding in the second half. But again, we saw in the first half that there are vulnerabilities there with them. Ronan and the lads showed that up as well, in their game against them. I suppose there's two things with them. First of all is when you're on top, you have to make a count, and you make a count by scoring goals. Mayo didn't do that, or they didn't even threaten to do that. Second thing is then, you can't turn over the ball against them. You just cannot turn over the ball against them, because when they do that, that's where their goals come from. The two first goals on Saturday night, Conor Callan's goal came from a ball that didn't go dead, from a Paddy Durkin shot at a point. Cluxton did very well to bat it down to himself. Second one came from Dermot O'Connor getting turned over in front of the Hogan stand, down the field, back of the net. So you do need the perfect performance to beat them. Can that happen? It can. It absolutely can. We beat them in the league final in 2017, and for that time of the year, it was as close as a perfect performance as we were going to get. And it can happen. It can happen on a given day. But the one thing with Dublin, if you want to beat them, you have to go and win it. They won't give it to you. Mm-hmm. They will not hand it to you. You have to go and win it. You have to earn it. You have to do everything right, because they're not going to drop to a level that's going to allow you to win by 2 or 3 points. You have to go and win it. And I think that's the way Kerry will be looking at it for 3 weeks' time.
And Ronan, like, he had a right cut off him. What jumped out at you from that game?
The importance of not giving away turnovers was key. You know, like, we kept the ball very well for long periods. Literally, you lose the ball now. You know, it's not just Dublin's against the top teams. You lose the ball, you're paying for it at the other end nearly every time. I felt what was interesting yesterday was that, yeah, they had that period of dominance, but actually Mayo had opportunities to go down the pitch and didn't take them. I know they were pinned in, but they actually got out. I think they had 7 attacks actually in and around that period and got very little return, So it wasn't just about, not being able to win. They won enough ball to actually affect the scoreboard at the other end and didn't do it. But I suppose the key thing about them is, and I've said this publicly before, the 16 semi-final, which I would say was probably one of the greatest games I've ever been at, right? What was absolutely marvellous about that game was, you on the line there, you did everything you could from the point of view of, you disrupted the kick out. There was marvellous switches made, where they made a switch, you made a switch, everything was done. And they ended up, Dublin that day ended up with 9 forward players on the pitch, with Kilkenny at wing back. Were 4 points down twice, in the second half, and kept their composure. That was the key thing. They were obviously rattled, but they kept playing, Like, you go back to the 82 final, we'll say, Kerry and Offaly, right? When Derby put the ball, if you actually look at the remaining 2 minutes of that game, Kerry, panicked massively, yeah. Tom Spillane shooting for a point from under the Hogan stand, and he on the 21,
Yeah.
Tim Kennelly, just pulling on the ball on the ground, kicking it forward. They won't do that.
Yeah.
And even if they are, 3-4 points down with 6 minutes to go, they'll keep playing. And that's why, actually, if Kerry find themselves in that position, they must keep going at them, keep going forward, and make gains, against their defence.
Yeah, that's great. It's actually a great point about 82. Most people think that the whistle blew as soon as Derry hit the ball to the back of the net. But, I thought the start of that second half as well, Ronan, which they hadn't had a lot of joy from the kickouts in the first half. Mayo went long with the majority of them and won a lot of those breaks. Whereas in the second half, that first, you know, that first 10-minute period, they won the first four or five of Mayo's kickouts, and they got scores off at least three of those, and they're like downhill runners. As soon as they start winning your kickout, they really, really put you on the back foot from that fit.
They do, and the hill becomes a factor in that as well. The hill, you know, especially in the big games, they propel them down the field when it's into the canal, and they suck them up the field when it's into the hill. The volume of noise, you know, that 7 or 8 minute period after half time the last day, and they thrive on scoring goals and catching kickouts. The hill really react to those moments, and they had those big moments. But like Ronan said, that's the thing, and I've said that before, that's the thing that I admire most, and it's probably the hardest thing to get into a group, is that not panicking, keep doing the right things. I actually think that they get better in those situations. Mm. They live for those moments. They live to be challenged, and they live to have to show what they're all about. And they really are brilliant at doing exactly that. Being in the moment, making the right decisions, keeping grinding away. Even that league final that I spoke about, that we just about got over the line, right at the end of that, Dean Rock had a free kick. That's that right. hit the post
yeah.
And it was going to extra time. We were gathering ourselves. We started saying, I was asking our nutritionist, Kevin Beasley, have you the vitamins and whatever else ready for the extra time? And he hit the post, which he doesn't do too often. And we won the game by a point. And that was after getting so much right throughout that game. You just have to, Ronan made the point there, you have to keep going right until the end, and eventually then you'll get there, and you just have to earn it. They're not going to give it to you. They're just not going to give it to you.
But like that composure and going to the, like, that is the quality that you're looking for in any team that you could possibly involve in. But what is it that they are doing outside of, like, they obviously have an amazing bunch of players right now, talented and athletic and, you know, mentally so strong, but they have that collective kind of mindset that we don't panic. We won't. If Mayo go 2 points ahead, that's okay, lads. We'll find. If Jack McCaffrey doesn't get a kick, that's okay. We'll keep going. We'll find a way. How what are they doing, like, to instill that into that group?
I assume it comes from, look, you'd have to say it must come from their manager, and, you know, even his demeanor on the sideline is, you know, he's always in control, and you know, he never seems to get too upset either way. And even in the 14th semi-final where they lost to Donegal, you know, he actually, you know, conducted himself throughout the game that way, came in and said the same thing afterwards after the game. So look, I suppose a manager transmits that, but maybe that's his personality. You know, it wouldn't be my way of doing it, but our aim, and I've seen you in the line a few times, but
I think as well that they've been there so many times, they've grounded out so many times, that builds a massive belief in the group. And, you know, they probably try things in training where they throw things at them, and they have scenarios where they're disrupting them and trying every kind of a thing to get them to think their way through it. And they're just very good at doing it. And the thing with them as well is it's not always the same players. They have their big players. They have the Fintons, the Kilkennys, the fellas that kind of generally guide the way. But, you know, against us in that game in 2016, it was Dear McConnelly that stepped up at the end, even though he hadn't had a major impact up until that point. You know, in 2013 in the game, it was McMenamin at the end. Michael Darren McCauley won a massive flick, you know, that he died full length to flick for the goal for McMenamin. So they have different fellas that step up on different days. Flynn has stepped up plenty of times. They're not relying on one or two fellas. Different fellas step up when the need is there, and that's just a sign of true champions, really.
I think that 16 game though was key. Like, you know, they're obviously at the five now, or, you know, on the brink of it, but that was the one that they came through. And I suppose you get, you know, where they literally had everything thrown at them. You know, the kickout collapsed coming up to half time. You know, they were in real trouble. You know, and obviously playing against a forward line that were going to hurt them. They'd come out and chase the game. And, you know, like, Kerry gave everything that day, both on the field and on the line, and they still came through it. And I suppose, you know, you gain a confidence from that. Mm. Then, you know, when you find yourself in that situation, we'll say, which did it against Mayo, but they weren't, like, the situation against Mayo wasn't as desperate as it was in that game in 16, you know. And I really think that was the key game for them in this run of games that they've had, you know, that they came through that.
What of Mayo, lads? What of, like, where do they go? Where does James Horne go from here? you know, at half time, like he made the point after the game about the quick turnaround from that, you know, the last Super 8 game to the semi-final. And, you know, he didn't say it outright, but he was probably suggesting maybe that they ran out of gas and physically that they were, you know, they were tired, which could well have been. But where do they go from here, Fitzy? I mean, are they like, we every year we kind of draw a line through them and say, that's it, they're gone, we won't see them again now for 5 years, and Andy Moran's going to retire, and this fella's going to retire, and we won't see him. And then the next year we're taking our words back because they're back at the foot of the mountain again.
Yeah, I think I can't see too many of them retiring, to be honest. I think the only reason they'll retire, I saw a thing there last week about Chris Barrett's schedule. He's based in Dublin, and, you know, in the gym on Monday night, as most players are, finishing work 3 o'clock on a Tuesday to get in the minibus to go to Mayo for training. Wednesday gym, Thursday off, Friday finish work at 3 o'clock in a car down to Castlebar to train, home to Belmullet, then play at the weekend. I think it's that kind of stuff. Jeez, yeah. that'll wear a player down into retirement rather than a defeat. I think that once the body is willing and able, they'll keep going until they win it, if they can win it. I think for Mayo, particularly with the age profile of their team, it's key for them to win the Connacht Championship, just from the point of view of getting silverware on the table, but also going the direct route. They were, you know, this year they had, was it 8 games they had in that period? You know, that they had 8 games in a pretty short period. They played a lot around the Super 8s and into the All-Ireland semi-final. That was down to after playing qualifier games. The fact they were beaten in the Connacht semi-final then meant that they were gone that bit earlier. There was more qualifier games to play. And because of that, they probably did run out of energy at the end of it. So I think for him, with his age profile, it'll be key for them to win the Connacht Championship and keep everyone injury-free. They were very unlucky with injuries this year. I mean, Dermot O'Connor just came back. Jason Doherty was a huge loss to them. He's central to what they do. He's such an effective, I think probably underestimated a bit, but he's a seriously effective forward when they have the ball. And without the ball, he just absolutely gives himself to the team, tackling and also disrupting runners. He's excellent at that. So they need to win the Connacht Championship and keep everyone in their squad fit. And if they do that, of course they can be an item again.
Yeah, and this was their heaviest defeat, obviously, to Dublin in a long time, and that was probably the bookies had it at -5, you know, and you thought if it was in and around that, that's where everybody else was clinging on to a little bit of hope that if Mayo can keep this to 4, 5, 6 points, Then you can easily make a case for, you know, at the time it was Kerry or Tyrone, whereas when it was a blowout, it was that's where the deflation and the sense of loss came as you were heading down to Piper's Corner.
But I think it was a big ask for them, you know, to come off the game the previous week. You know, they had a couple of things against them. Obviously, they played the 6 day turnaround from a very heavy game, and like it does take, you know, same, and like it takes you're doing nothing really the week of the game, and even mentally to try and lift yourself up for it, to come up against a team, you know, at the level they were playing against. Then the injuries to obviously key players, and look, I know they got Ruan and Dermot O'Connor onto the pitch, but again, I think you've alluded to this before, I mean, you know, when you're not, you know, training properly and training fully, it's almost impossible at this stage to come into a game of that level and impact it. Look, and I think both really had minimal influence in the game, Ruan and Dermot O'Connor, having had very good seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a huge ask to come in when you're not fully fit. You really have to be 100% fit now at this stage.
Ruan came in on Brian Fenton, like, you know, and like he's probably their most athletic around there, that, you know, the guy that was going to do the best job in him. But Jesus, that's some ask after being out for a month or two to come in to the best footballer in the country and try and keep a handle. And to his credit, he probably did okay in the first half, and he held him relatively quiet. And it was after that he took off, really.
What about that first 35 minutes, Eamon? Because, you know, everybody's looking for the template. Everybody's looking for the game plan that, you know, whether it beats Dublin, but that certainly slows Dublin down and nullifies that. And I mean, I'm still looking for the explanation as to what happened after halftime. Everybody's, you know, this morning talking about, you know, Dublin flicked this switch. And, you know, I genuinely believe, I'm with Ronan on this, I definitely believe the short turnaround, you know, hurt Mayo hugely physically. But in terms of what they did in the first 35 minutes, I mean, the first question I'd ask you is, are Kerry capable of that? Are Kerry in their development at a level to do what Mayo did in the first half in terms of A, with the ball, being patient, and B, shunting Dublin into areas and, you know, affecting really, really good turnovers and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, look, of course they can, but I think from the Kerry perspective, I think the way that we have been playing and the way that they'll probably play in the final is it'll be quicker than the way Mayo are playing in that period. Mayo, you know, had a solid first half, but they didn't hurt Dublin enough on the scoreboard. They're almost too patient. I felt that when they were on top, and again, these are the calls, if they had started Andy Moore, they would have had him inside and they would have had the shape that Tommy Welch gave Kerry towards the end of the game. That was absent for Mayo, definitely in the first half, the last day. But then, if Dublin had been bombing up the field and Andy Moran was redundant, it would have been a foolish call. So just the way the game panned out, maybe if he had been in there, it would have been an option for them. But look, I think Kerry will attack them and they can hurt them. They can hurt the Kerry forwards can hurt Dublin, definitely. But it can be as simple against Dublin as having the ball. If you have the ball, if you're putting them backwards, if you're sucking their forwards out of position, tracking you, tackling you, and you're scoring and killing the ball, you know, you can ask questions of them. But if they have the ball and you're turning over ball and they're coming at you in waves, that's where it's hard. That's when it's a long day out then. Mm. So it's going to be about having the ball. It's going to be about primary possession. It's going to be about kickouts. Can we disrupt Cluxton? Can Shane Ryan is going to get a test. He hasn't got yet.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be hugely important and hugely significant. But if Kerry can get enough ball, of course we can hurt Dublin, but it has to go dead then. That is definitely the thing. In terms of what happened in the second half, it was their body language, it was their intent, it was their attitude. They upped it, they won the throw-in, Dean Rock got the free, and they went from there. And like Ronan said, Mayo needed to stop the bleed, and they had chances and they went up the field, but they didn't get a score just to calm the whole thing down and say, okay lads, we're facing a kick out here again, let's go after it. And in the other games in 2016 and 17, they did that very effectively, where they got scores and they pushed them back up the field and they disrupted Cluxton again, but they just probably ran out of legs yesterday and they didn't have the energy to do it.
Kieran O'Neill actually made an interesting point last week when we were talking about fatigue, and it was more physical fatigue, and he made the point that you don't feel the physical fatigue as much until you're in a position where your brain mentally starts telling you, Jesus, we're under serious pressure here. And that's what happened at the start of the second half. Like, there was no issue. Mayo were running like gazelles in the first half. They were all over the place, and you were saying, Jesus, now they look fresh and they look energetic and everything's good. But as soon as Dublin started to push them towards the cliff, you could see Aidan O'Shea, his energy levels dropped after being around the place, tackling and hitting everybody and winning breaks. His energy, all of them, the same way Colin Boyle started to look tired. And it's amazing, like, when a team gets on top and has that momentum and are running over the top of you, that's suddenly then when your physical fatigue starts to really take over.
Yeah. I suppose just one comment on Mayo is, you know, I would feel that, you know, he has done well in James Horn in introducing newer players into the, you know, I don't think it's all negative. I think a lot of players will stay, as Eamon has said, but James Carf, Phil McDonough, you know, the young Conor back, Owen O'Donoghue, was it? Yeah. You know, he has definitely introduced players in the league and they have won a league, you know, so I do think they'll come back stronger for it, and they have been unfortunate with injuries. I suppose looking at Kerry and Dublin, Kerry will actually find it easier to play against Dublin than they would have against Tyrone, but it is about primary possession, about kick-out strategies, and, you know, do Kerry, you know, have the smarts to I suppose vary their kick-out approach, which they've done previously, obviously, in years gone by, to ensure that you have enough possession and when the game goes, you know, when the game goes against you, that you're able to kind of hang in there and not let it get away from you.
That sounds easy, and you it sounds lovely there, that template, isn't it? It's just no, and that's it, obviously. But it's going to be, and we'll get to it later, I suppose, in the next week or two. But like, it's the final that most neutrals were looking forward to, you know. Outside of Dublin or Mayo and Tyrone, should I say, it's the one that has that whole kind of ironic twist that, you know, can Kerry be the team that ultimately stopped Dublin from doing a five in a row. The team that they themselves, as you mentioned in 82, were scuppered as the first team in senior history to go and do that. So there's going to be plenty about that in the next couple of weeks, and Seamus Darby will surely make an appearance around the place, and it's whether Kerry can come up with a Seamus Darby of their own for the next 3 weeks, and we'll see how it goes. So we're going to wrap it there, everybody, and thanks to Ronan and to Eamon for coming in, and to Tony and to Larry on sound. Hope you enjoy listening.
With Renault, passion for what drives you. Official car partner of the GAA.